You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, we have our Dakota Political Junkies with us in the SDPB Kirby Family Studio today. We are broadcasting live as part of SDPB's special election coverage for Decision 2024. John Hunter is here. He is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader and a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame, and also Dr. Michael Card, professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Dakota. John, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Lori.
Mike Card, welcome. Thanks.
I'm pleased to be here and to be asked to be here.
All right. John Hunter, I understand that you have a really strong record of editorial writing in the Madison Daily Leader, except maybe this one time where you made a prediction that did not age well. Did not age as well as you have, sir.
As the writer of almost 6,000 editorials, I was the farthest off this one that I ever have been, so I set new records. I thought the idea of removing the or updating gender references would be a landslide victory that would be some huge number that everyone would agree in that, and it not only didn't have the landslide, it lost, and so 58-42.
The land slid the other way.
Yeah, the land slid out from underneath my feet.
I feel like this is worth talking about partially because we really didn't talk about it much. This was a bill that came up during the State House, and I think it was Aaron Tobin and some other female lawmakers who said, we have a female governor. The state constitution should represent that in our language, so we would like to...
The governor mentioned it in the State of the State address.
Yep, the governor mentioned it. I'm not sure if there was applause.
She might have done it in the inaugural address even. I mean, it was early. Yeah. It was well before Tobin and those put it together.
So there was this idea that it was a measure to honor and celebrate South Dakota's first female governor by changing the language to say, the governor will do this and the governor will do that. South Dakotans didn't rebuke Governor Noem necessarily in this, but they definitely didn't want the language changed. Mike Card, since we can't trust John Hunter on this topic, what happened here?
A flash of honesty.
This is one that I got right, and it was largely based on anecdotal evidence that I heard people talking to me saying, this is the legislature putting a woke amendment in front of us. And I just shook my head and asked people to clarify and said, well, it's trying to make all genders look alike. It's like the pronouns. And I'm just shaking my head, you know, as opposed to replacing he with the title of the person who has the legal authority in statute in the Constitution to make decisions or to perform functions.
And on the ballot, in the ballot question, it said it would cost money, too. There was a fiscal note
that's great.
On your ballot. Why would it cost money to change
the... I didn't even see the fiscal note.
Well,
it must have been very small.
It specifically dealt with the reprinting of the state constitution when it didn't need to be reprinted, despite the fact that there were three other amendments that may have passed.
That would have caused the reprinting of the... All right. So, John?
Well, there's a couple things that... For one, I think there was perhaps a little of vote no on everything. And I think some people, especially constitutional amendments, and there, we'll see an exception here in a moment with the Medicaid work requirement. But I think there's a certain portion of South Dakota's voters who say, don't mess with the Constitution. Bring all the initiated measures you want. You know, refer statutes, whatever those things are, but let's not vote on the Constitution every time. So I think there was some of that. Kind of leave well enough alone.
Yeah. And then also there is a nuance, though, in the vote no. Because I did hear voters tell me that someone had knocked on their door and they said, by the way, you should just vote for me. I'm your candidate. And those ballot questions, just vote no on all of them for simplicity's sake. So possibly some fatigue, possibly some just great communication and advertising from different groups that were just like, no on this, no on that. It's too extreme to sort of build a collective no. Yep. But then, Mike, there's a nuance here. They vote no on the referred law, which is a rebuke to lawmakers, and then they vote yes on Amendment F, which is a, we want the lawmakers to be able to add work requirements to, and again, unofficial results. We don't have all the tallies right. in. Some things may change, but it looks like F is going to get the support to go forward. So there it's like, yes, we want lawmakers to have the option to do this. So it's, they didn't just, people didn't just go in and fill in, no one walk out the door.
No, they didn't. I think to a large extent, people, I saw a lot of cheat sheets in people's hands as they were going in to vote.
Yeah.
Seven is a lot. It's not the most. In the past five elections, we've had more. We've had 10 and 11 in 2012 and 2016. I think the larger part here was the significant efforts to get people to vote no. The linguists tell me that the word extreme does things to people's minds that just absolutely turns them off. Too extreme is exactly the phrase you would use if you want to defeat something. Constitutional amendments over the state's history are barely above 50%, and we consider we only had initiated amendments since 1974. Initiated measures don't do all that well. They're underwater in terms of less than 50% pass. The ones that work are, if you consider voting no on a referred measure, that's about 60% success rate. If you consider voting no a success, because it's the petitioner said, you know, if we think an initiated measure is there ought to be a law, a referred law is there ought not to be a law.
Back to the drawing board.
Back to the drawing board.
Go try again.
Yep.
The other thing that we really learned about this, the ballot question was just how much it's, we saw it change through polling, through Mason-Dixon and, Newswatch and the Cheeseman Center for Democracy at USD. So we saw the evolution of the polls and then that huge push of money at the end where if you, I watched the football game. On Sunday night, I watched the Vikings game on broadcast television, and every ad was... I have a friend from Wisconsin who's like, don't even tell me about it. Like, you cannot imagine what it's like to live in a swing state. I'm like, but this is awful. Anyway, so every all the money was rolling in, and it was a lot of no on abortion. It was a lot of, we might need to change the law, but this is too extreme. And marijuana was... That was the other one I was surprised that it was Donald Trump wants you to vote for... marijuana, which I thought was a bit of a stretch. I couldn't quite tell where they were getting their footage from on that ad. But marijuana failed, too. So marijuana, recreational marijuana, abortion, do they come back, John? As it, or are these the death knell? Because we also saw a huge, the Democrats did not do well. It's not like we saw a bunch of more progressive issues make it, and then Democrats failed. Everything failed. This was a Republicans showed up very strongly yesterday to say what it means to be Republican. Are those issues dead?
Well, I think there will be, if I can predict that, and my track record's not good. But
we can forgive you with the, the constitutional linguistic obscure.
But I think there, I really do believe in the fatigue thing, and I think we will, we might see fewer initiatives coming up or... maybe referrals will stay popular, but constitutional amendments and so on. So I just think the success rate of those is not good. Now, things like abortion, I think will go on forever. Taxes possibly could. I think it's worth talking a little bit about the sales tax and that.
For sure.
You know, that could take a different form, but with that kind of 70-30 wipeout. And now, granted, it was not clearly defined. There were some things about, you know, anything consumed, which would be medicine or alcohol or
gasoline,
whatever.
Gasoline was my favorite that they were talking about for human consumption.
Yes. Well,
because you use it up.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Because it's something that people buy that's used up, and then they go buy it again. That's why it was a consumable, potentially. I think that was a bit of a stretch.
Right.
And I think it was unlikely that they were going to stop.
Right. But that's, you know, there was a long time when I think that vote would have been closer.
Yeah.
But I think, and I think fairly, people were worried that there would be another tax or there would be sharp budget cuts.
Right.
And, you know, if teachers are already, you know, we need to make progress on teacher pay, that this would slow that even further. So I don't, long answer to a short question, Lori, is that I think some of these may come back, but I think fewer of them in the next election.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me on these measures, certainly GH28 and the referred law 21, what struck me was how well organized the campaigns were, and mostly on the no side, and they were well funded. You know, if we look at G, clearly the major proponent of Amendment G left out the National Abortion Rights League and Planned Parenthood. They sat on the sidelines. The money came in very, very late from Illinois. Again, we tend not to like out-of-state money in ballot issues. We love it on candidate campaigns. We're not hypocritical at all here in South Dakota. But that really made things difficult is if you don't craft your proposed legislation, in this case, proposed constitutional amendment, with all of the stakeholders who are likely to support you that already have a, you know, in politics we call it a ground game, which is an organization, you're not going to get very far. And they didn't get very far. And the same thing with the drafting of the IM-28 on the grocery tax, which was human consumption. He didn't follow the LRC's recommendation. Their initial cost estimate was based on groceries because they said, well, if what you really want is taxes on groceries, which is well-defined in our statute, largely because of the streamlined sales tax project. So if you ignore that and you talk about human consumption, one opposition was, well, this is an income tax. Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Ten Haken was the chair of that committee.
Right.
Then we're worried about what all are we taxing? And now the cost estimate for human consumption, even though we can't define it, goes up to $630 million. Well, then we see, as you said, state employees are worried. Teachers are worried. Students were worried about tuition going up. All on something that could have been fixed by the legislature that they had 8 months.
Yeah.
But it took it out of the realm of, do we not want a tax on groceries versus you just need to vote no on this. This is so terrible.
Hmm. Let's take that as a bridge to the national election, because the economy and the fear over what you would not be able to afford. Or I heard a lot of people in business in the previous week saying, like, everything in business is just kind of on hold. People are just waiting, you know, to figure out what happens with the election. And I kept saying, well, what do they think will happen when Donald Trump is elected? What is the policy? And the answers were pretty vague. It was just a feeling that if he went back to the White House, even if they didn't like him at all, even if they had disassociated themselves from him as a person, they had a feeling, a strong feeling, that the economy was going to be better. So people are worried about their pocketbooks. Is it? It's always the economy in some ways, right? Is the economy stupid?
James Carville's curse on us.
what stands out to you in this with the idea of an certainly some people admire Donald Trump, but I heard a lot of people say they had concerns about his character. I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say a lot of people who voted for him were not sure they like him. However, they want him in the White House. What's going on?
As it was relayed on Morning Edition this morning, they want a strong man. They want someone who will change things, even if it means breaking them to get that change. People's perspective of the economy is largely based on their pocketbook. Wages have not gone up as fast as inflation has gone down. So many people are buying things that cost 19-20% more than they did in 2019. That's rational thinking. I don't like this. I don't have the money to pay for these groceries. You know, and some were saying, you know, it costs $4 for a dozen eggs. Well, where are you buying those eggs at? but the other, you know, and that's...
I totally get the egg argument if you are a bakery.
If
you have to buy a whole lot of eggs, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
But for, like, you know, a regular family of four, you got a big egg budget.
Yeah. Well,
but eggs to that point becomes you can remember the price of eggs. You can measure other things by it.
Gasoline is another one because it's advertised in front
of
you everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All of these staple items,
they
have gone up in price. And some of that is due to price gouging. Some of that is due to shortages. We've got bird flu all over the place. But most of us don't pay attention to the news. And to realize that there is bird flu, there is shortages, that we've killed off millions of chickens for fear of transferring that to the human beings, and all I see is what affects my pocketbook. Mm-hmm. That's rational thinking. It is. But
is it based on evidence?
Well, it isn't based on all the evidence. It's based on what easily comes in is things we already believe. Boy, I think prices are going up. I'm going to see everything with that. It's sort of like watching a sports game. I can easily see the fouls that the other team makes, but I have a hard time seeing the fouls that my team makes. And that's because stuff comes in easily that fits with what we already believe, and we may not even see evidence that would contradict what we believe.
Yeah.
Well, people may not listen to the news, but they listen to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
They're listening to you right now. Help them sort through all of this. So, John, the president, former President Donald Trump, and now president-elect, is getting stronger in his support. The felonies, the convictions, the controversies, his behavior on the campaign trail is not deterring people from liking him. In fact, more people are solidifying around him in America. What does this say about America and the direction that we're going?
I can't say definitively, but I have some thoughts. And part of it is, I heard as much now as ever, and you hear it a little bit every election where people say, gee, I wish we had different candidates to choose from. Right. I don't like either one. So there was a little bit of, I think, maybe a lot of this election, I'm voting for the one that I like that can do the most damage or whatever.
Right.
You know,
lesser of two evils.
No one's, right, lesser of two evils. Thank you. But the idea of a candidate attracting votes rather than repelling votes is still a bit of a mystery. That's just not what our long history has been. We used to kind of be inspired by candidates, and you'd want someone to lead you. And I think there was just an awful lot of, so people would find things, you know, a lot of people would say, well, I don't like Trump, but I really don't like Biden at first. And then when Harris came in, I said, well, I don't like her either. The interesting thing for president, people vote on a really broad range of reasons, and not all of them are economy or something. I mean, they're tall or short or old or young or whatever. I hear people voting all the time. They didn't like Kamala's laugh, right? That was, why would you vote for someone or against someone because of the way they laugh?
It's just a very standard anti-female candidate thing. I mean, let's just call that what that is. If you are picking out a woman's laugh or her ambition, or her hair, you can pretty much just say that's something that female candidates, we've seen it with Kristi Noem, we've seen it with Kamala Harris. It's bipartisan or nonpartisan criticism of female candidates.
And I don't know if, I can't explain it very well. I didn't think Donald Trump would get more votes this time than he did last time. I didn't think he would have converted people. Yeah. Now, the one thing about the economy, we did run up huge deficits again in the last 4 years. I don't know if people pay attention to that. Much of that was kind of COVID started, or at least COVID catalyst. But then I think there was this whole infrastructure thing and so forth. And I don't know if there's some thought that that's
Inflation
spun out of control.
Inflation Reduction Act,
right.
And we have to go back further, because the 2017 Targeted Jobs Tax Act was $2 trillion all by itself. There was another trillion in COVID aid under Donald Trump. So there's $3 trillion there. And then we have $4 trillion under Biden. And the Wall Street Journal and The Economist and the Tax Foundation, all incredibly sarcasm liberal organizations, they are not liberal organizations, have predicted that Donald Trump will add another $7.5 trillion in deficits if his policies, the things he promised during the last days of the campaign, which is one way to get people to vote for you, is let's eliminate taxes on tips, let's eliminate taxes on Social Security, let's have lots of giveaway programs.
Taxes right. Over time. Yeah.
Talk to
more
say,
taxes on
yeah, tell rich people, I know you're already rich, but we're going to cut your taxes more.
Right.
You
I
can
think
promise
he said he was
going
to cut taxes on people's overtime, so they should get to take that home. Harris said, you know, all kinds of things that I'm going to make it so Americans only have to work one job. I was like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
So there were a whole lot of promises. Yep. What I'm trying to figure out, Mike, is this idea of are people nostalgic for pre-pandemic Trump economy, like what they remember about that? Or are we saying, like, he didn't get enough time to dismantle and reconstruct the nation that we want, so we need to send him back? Are we trying to go back, or are we trying to go forward?
Well, that's an interesting thought, because in essence, that former president, now President-elect Trump, has suggested that it really was the case that he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do, and
that darn pandemic got in the way.
Well, it was the pandemic, and I think he's going to, he would say, I'm putting words in his mouth, but I think there's lots of evidence. He would say that what happened is people held me back. People I appointed to bosses that I, to jobs.
John
that
Kelly,
I thought, yep.
H.R. McMaster, Jim McManus,
who
all came out and said he shouldn't be president. And they're not going to go back with him.
No.
So we're going to find out what happens next.
Well, we may end up with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., heading some degree of infectious disease.
All right. So John Thune, we know, is at Senate, is turning for the Senate, or turning for Republicans. So you're going to have, what do we know historically speaking about when the president is in the party and so is Congress? Will we see more progress in a certain direction or less, because it's a sort of a pipe dream that everybody's going to get along and pass some?
Well, I think we know in the Senate part, that's where confirmation of appointed officials go through treaties and things of that nature. The Senate is going to be in the control of the Republican Party, and it will be a John, whether it's John Thune or John Cornyn, is likely to be the majority leader. We don't know which one yet. The issue there is he will get his appointments made, the judicial appointments, the appointments to the federal judiciary, whether it be a Supreme Court opening, whether it be cabinet secretaries, undersecretaries, the 3,000 appointed positions not subject to civil service protections. Mm-hmm. There's the effort to remove civil service protections to make more employment at will. But generally, the Senate goes along unless it's an extreme case,
okay,
if they're in the same party. I cut you off.
John Hunter. I just also want to bring Kristi Noem in here, Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, who was in Florida, not in Sioux Falls. John Thune was in Sioux Falls speaking to Republicans there. They were applauding him in ways that they hadn't just a couple years ago, right? Remember? And so there's an interesting flip. What happens to her next? What do you want to add to Mike's thoughts here?
Well, just one quick deal on Congress. If you have a split Congress where the Republicans control the Senate and the Democrats control the House, there tends to be less legislation that makes it all the way to the president's desk. But Trump in particular has taken executive actions farther than others, and I think this does shift more power to the administration from the Congress, which was odd that Congress is almost abdicating some of its responsibilities, and they don't get anything done, so the administration takes action anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So in my view, that's a misbalance of power. I think that Congress is leaving some of its responsibilities. Now, talking about Governor Noem, I think there probably is a spot for her somewhere in the federal government. Don't know where that is. I don't think it's probably a cabinet-level position, but she has been loyal to him through all the, the felony convictions and so forth. So Trump tends to reward his loyalists and punish his detractors. And so I think there probably is, if she chooses, and I think she probably would like that, would like a position in Washington. So I think it might be available.
We need a farm bill. We need a balanced budget. There's some pretty big things. There was a bipartisan immigration reform package that was tanked. So there are questions about immigration
reform.
By President Trump on the campaign trail, by the former president on the campaign trail. Harris tried to use that to get votes ineffectively. People didn't buy that for whatever reason, nationwide at least.
Yep.
Does this Congress come back ready to work and ready to? I guess I'm expressing skepticism that even if you have your entire party together, that you're going to be able to just move big omnibus packages forward in a way. How clear is the road ahead, really? This is still the American government. It's still a democracy that's designed to chug along at a slower pace.
Right. We don't know how the House is going to turn out yet. There's still a number of races yet to be decided. All revenue packages proposals have to originate in the House of Representatives, meaning they have to get out. The Speaker controls the agenda in the House. They may not come out as desired unless they are part of an omnibus package where, okay, I'll take this, but I have to give you that to get there. And that increases spending generally.
That is I think the next best question coming up in the next 4 years is, will the checks and balances work in Congress and in the courts? Will those three branches of government work as they are designed, or will they be overcome in this wave? It's a concern of many Americans, I think. And there, I'd heard people who'd vote for either candidate and said, I just hope there's a split, that it's not all Republican or all Democrat, that they hope there is in fact, I heard it more than once. It was not just an anecdotal thing.
So we still have a sense that we are, even though we're a nation divided and a nation polarized, that we are pluralistic in the sense that we are going to work together. And we do. I mean, there are millions of people who voted for Kamala Harris. So there's still... I think Alexander Hefner said the electorate smoothie. So I mean, even though this is a really red state, he's like, he always pushes back against the idea that it's a red state because there are so many people who voted, you know, for Sheryl Johnson. They're still here. They're in that smoothie, and we all have to work together to meet the needs of people in rural South Dakota and people in the most urban downtown area that we have produced.
Well, you're right, and I've said this on this show before, is that we take 52-48 victories for someone as if it were a landslide.
Right, yeah.
And it's not, I mean, again, there are people who, these are a lot of narrow victories. I think, in fact, the whole Electoral College thing is weird. I was trying to explain it to someone yesterday where he said, well, if you win Georgia 51-49, you get all their votes. You don't get some allocated percentage. So it's... I mean, the all or nothing nature of our democracy, where if you win 51%, then you have control of something, does ignore the 49% who voted for the other. So in the best situation, you'd have a chance to listen to both and incorporate ideas and come together.
Right.
You know, we certainly have two competing philosophies in our country, one of which is still based, for me, I think of it as a New Deal philosophy. We are here to help everyone. And that helping everyone means providing opportunities. The other philosophy is the purpose of government is to make the market operate efficiently and effectively, and it may hurt individuals. That, I think, is what's called neoliberalism to us pointy-headed academic types. It's, you know, it's liberal philosophy, meaning freedom for the individual, and the individual is what takes place in the marketplace. Yeah. So while... we don't know how those are going to shake out. Part of what we're seeing in the battle for the legislature that we heard Lee talk about earlier, whether it's the Freedom Caucus, which is always interesting because the list was always put up in the Senate lobby and then torn down moments later. So we don't really know who's in it. But we know that there's going to be challenges in the legislature in terms of organizing based on the Freedom Caucus and what I would label as stalwart Republicans, traditional Eisenhower, Reagan. But those two philosophies are operating, but the Freedom Caucus seems to be blending the two. And we see that with the Josh Hawleys at the national level. We see it with the Ted Cruzes. We see this sort of movement. Well, we do have a role for government, and it's involved, which is not traditional in the past 40 years Republican thinking. Instead, we're seeing a blending, and much like a glass-covered coffin, remains to be seen what'll happen.
All right, we're going to leave it there for now.
The pointy head thing is sticking with me somehow.
There's so much sticking with me. I wish we had another hour. John Hunter, Mike Carr, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Lori.